Good morning. Welcome to our panel discussion for this first day of December, 12th month of the year. We begin it today, and very nice to have you with us. We have many issues to discuss and a wonderful panel to discuss them with, and we welcome your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the group to you. And we begin with WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. It's a wonderful day. Today is Giving Tuesday. You know about that?
Yes.
Giving Tuesday, which is the day for giving thanks, and a lot of charities, families, business, community centers, and others are asking, and we're just saying, if you're listening right now and you love the Roundtable, we know so many of you do, it would be great for you to do something, and just go to WAMC.org and put something in.
Giving Tuesday, WAMC.org, and Mike Spain, you're always giving. Thank you very much for being here.
He is.
I'm very happy to be here, and I hope people do participate in the theme of today. It's great, great message.
Indeed. Thank you very much. And Barbara Smith joins us. She is, did I say that you're the Times Union Associate Editor, Mike?
Probably
not. If I didn't, I should.
Well, I am.
Because you are. He has a business card for it and everything.
Right.
activist, essayist, and author Barbara Smith joins us as well. Good morning, Barbara.
Hi, nice everybody.
Nice to have you with us. Thank you. All right, let's go right to the topics at hand here. And, well, we'll start with a biggie. It broke yesterday afternoon, right around 4 o'clock. And Sheldon Silver, who had a seemingly... tractable grip on power for decades as one of the most feared politicians in New York State, was found guilty on Monday of federal corruption charges, ending a trial that was the capstone of the government's efforts to expose the seamy culture of influence peddling in Albany. The verdict was a quick and unceremonious end for Mr. Silver, who, during his more than two decades as the state assembly speaker, displayed a Teflon-like quality in deflecting questions about his outside income, as well as calls for his ouster. Mike.
Well, basically, the jury, in quick form, found that they agreed with the federal prosecutors and say that Shelley Silver basically made $4 million through kickbacks and bribes. And it was a pretty sudden kind of a shock, I think. People were speculating that it might turn out differently because people in the Capital Region remember vividly the trial a few years ago of the former state Senate Majority Leader Joe Bruno, who first was convicted of many of the same charges, basically federal charges of, dishonest services, I think is how they describe it. And he went and appealed it and had it thrown out. Now, a mitigating factor back then was that the U.S. Supreme Court had made a ruling that reinterpreted the honest services statute. Now, the case against Silver was in that new understanding of that statute, so that may make it more difficult for Silver to make an appeal like Bruno did. But you can bet there'll be an appeal. He was unceremoniously stripped of his position in the state assembly because he was convicted of these felonies, and his name was taken off the door over at the assembly office building, legislative office building, and he now is just Citizen Silver, which is a big change. He was elected 40 years ago, and he's wielded a lot of power, done a lot of things, and had extraordinary influence in state government. So it is a big change for him.
Was anyone else surprised that he was found guilty on every count?
I was.
Yeah.
I personally was.
I mean, every count.
Yeah.
It didn't take the jury a long time once they got started to make this decision.
No, I mean, with the holiday, it was like two days, right?
Right. There was a few juror problems. Last Wednesday, a woman who was on the jury told the judge that she was having anxiety attacks. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, why don't you relax? We're going to take the weekend off and come back on Monday. And then yesterday, as they began to deliberate, another juror said that he found out that a relative was associated with Silver in some way, I think worked with him or something, and thought that was a conflict of interest. The judge talked to him, and she sent him back to the jury room and said, you have a job to do and you can do it. And it was only a few hours after that when they finally focused.
Well, that's right. Look, I have written more columns on this, talked endlessly, as you have, Mike, about this problem of the cesspool of public corruption, you know, in Albany. And I have to say, first of all, nobody's going to agree with me, but as a man, as a human being, I feel sorry for Shelley. I do. He had been on this radio station many times. I think what he did was inexcusable, to tell you the truth. And there's not much one can say about that. But it is, in so many ways, a human tragedy that you lay at the door of avarice and of arrogance, that you can get away with this and that nobody will ever take notice, and that the way the system is, and his defense. What was his defense? Which was, they're all doing it. So that's the way business is done here in Albany, and you just have to understand that.
Yeah, may I read the quote from the article,
sure,
which I put in boldface?
Sure.
Mr. Silver's lawyers argued that in charging him, Mr. Bharara's office had sought to criminalize the kinds of activity in which state legislators routinely engage. Quote, they look at conduct which is legal, end quote, Mr. Molo told the jury in his opening statement, conduct which is normal, conduct which allows government to function, consistent with the way that our founding fathers of the state of New York wanted it to function. And they say that is illegal. And I was like, what?
Yeah. Well, he didn't have much to work with.
It was just out there. It was so out there. I think that's really out
there.
True,
Barbara. I mean, in their defense, they basically, Silver's attorneys basically acknowledged what the prosecution alleged did happen. They just said that was not a violation of the law. That is the way that deals are brokered. And part of the problem is that you have part-time, quote, around part-time legislators,
sure,
who have allowed to have outside employment, outside compensation. And in that regard, some of their outside work might parallel some of the work they're doing in their legislative roles, and it can benefit clients on the outside. That was the issue with Joe Bruno.
But it really benefited this guy.
But in this particular case, it benefited Silver himself, where he received a portion of the legal fees for clients that he sent to his law firm and real estate clients he sent to another law firm that he was related to. And he did not disclose that either, which
I think that's one of the things the juror said that killed him,
yeah,
which was this juror who was the one who clearly was the holdout. You know, in the beginning.
That's right. The New York Times got a hold of the one juror that was...
She said two things. She said two things that I found extraordinarily interesting. One is she would have felt better if Shelley had testified. Now, if Shelley had testified himself, the prosecution was going to be able to ask him all kinds of questions, and that's the last thing a lawyer is going to want to have happen.
He would have had to plead the fifth on a lot of things, perhaps.
And
doesn't look good before a jury.
Right. And the other thing was that she said that but the first thing was what I just said, and then the second thing was that she just felt the failure to disclose the extra money that he got from the real estate firm,
the second law firm that we didn't even know about,
that was not on his sheet, which his disclosure sheet, that convinced her.
Well, I just want to say, as somebody who was elected twice to our local common council, the city hall is right across the street from the state legislature.
Right.
So when things are going on there, I used to look out the window when I was at a council meeting, and it would be at night and the building is so beautiful and et cetera. And I was thinking, what is going on over there? And then I'd have conversations.
Well, now you know. Yeah.
Then I'd have conversations with people, and they would talk about, well, you know, it's a part-time job, and there's so much temptation, this, that, and the other. And I'm saying, well, I have this part-time job too, but the thing is, we only get paid $20,000 a year. So the thing is, in some ways, we should be more prone to trying to find extra
I don't think money was the problem here, right? I mean, other than greed was a problem,
right?
But it wasn't. He had money; he didn't have to. right? He wasn't doing it for out of necessity.
He was good. He lived right around the corner from Katz's Delicatessen.
Law firm in Manhattan, you know, Shelley Silver was. But now, you know, this verdict certainly indicates one of the reasons he kept his job was he was able to send a lot of business his way, including, you know, patients of this physician who was at Columbia University who was getting state grants to do research. And, you know, and it benefited the law firm, which turned around and benefited him. And, you know, maybe that's the way it does work, but I think the jury and the prosecutors made a convincing case it was against
the
law.
The thing that we kept on hearing throughout the trial, throughout the build-up to the trial, and now is that not only was Sheldon Silver on trial, but Albany and the culture of Albany was on trial as well.
I mean, to add to that list, nobody in the law firms were held responsible in any way for doing this. They testified.
They were cooperating witnesses.
What, they didn't know that this was going on? I mean, come on.
Well, it'll all take on more volume within the next couple of weeks when there's a verdict in the parallel trial going on
with
in the federal courthouse in Manhattan.
Okay, which raises another whole question.
So two out of the three men in the room.
Say that again.
Two out of three of the men in the room are on trial.
Two out of the three men in the room. Okay.
Well, you know, that sets up a punchline for when, if the verdict actually goes against Dean Skelos. And you remember at the end, at the end of a press conference where they announced, where Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney for New York, announced the indictment of Shelley Silver several months ago. They said, "Will there be more, sir?" And he said, "Stay tuned." Now, if the other verdict goes against Dean Skelos and he still says stay tuned, that will send shudders of fear throughout Albany, I think, and perhaps through the executive chamber. Who knows?
There's one article by a longstanding former editor of the New York Post this morning which made that point, in that newspaper, that this thing would have Andrew's knees knocking as a result of this. You know, I don't think anybody has ever said of Andrew Cuomo that, I mean, he's power hungry, but I don't think anybody has ever said that he takes money illegally in a time like this. So I think that the Moreland Act Commission disbanding, which is what started a good deal of this with Preet Bharara, is very important. But there are the Buffalo Billions, you'll remember that, and contracts being awarded. So a whole nother area is, do you trade access and money and contracts to how much you've given in a political campaign? And that would be a major area for Preet to open up right now.
Right. I agree with you. I don't think anybody has made any credible allegations that Andrew Cuomo has personally benefited from, you know, an arrangement or a deal or anything. But his campaign, his political campaign, has received millions of dollars from real estate interests in New York City, and he has taken
some of the same real estate interests, by the way, that were implicated
in the Shelley Silver case, right? And you know, the Greenwood development, especially, but nobody has accused the governor of taking money, getting money in his pocket, but his campaign.
As I say, that's a whole other substantive area that we do know that you give money to political campaigns. Why? Oh, because I just don't want to be on the side of the gods. No, you give money because you want something back for giving it. And here is a place that Bharara could make a real inroad if he decided to open that up.
I'm just asking the hypothetical question, though, that if Dean Skelos is convicted, is Preet Bharara the most powerful man in New York State?
Well, it depends on how you define power. If you define power as he got these people out of here, he is. If you define power as he talks to anybody, if he were the governor, and there's some talk that he might want to run for governor, by the way. If he were the governor, that would be power because you direct resources to one place or the other. The real question is Skelos going to be easier to convict than Sheldon Silver was? I thought from the very beginning because of all those tapes they have about, you know, with him talking to the kid and the kid talking back to him, the son and all
fairly
that.
Fairly damning.
Yeah, they were damning. I thought that he would be the easier of the two. I read an analysis in some newspaper this morning that said he was going to be much harder to convict than Silver. So I don't know.
We are just about out of time for this break. We're going to go over to BBC News, and then we'll come back. We'll read some letters and also go on to other topics. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. And we'll, as I said, we'll go through the letters. Alan Chartok is here. Mike Spain, Barbara Smith, I'm Joe Donahue. And, of course, we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. And we'll go to those letters, plus we'll talk about some other events that are happening in the news. Of course, the climate conference in Paris as well. And we'll take on all of that after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. This morning we have been discussing so far in the program the conviction of Sheldon Silver, found guilty on all counts by a federal jury yesterday in Manhattan. And we have many letters on this subject. We will go over those letters, and then we'll move on to some other issues as well.
So Grace says, if by some miracle the New York State Legislature were to pass serious campaign finance and quid pro quo reforms, would the Supreme Court overturn them? That's what she said.
All right.
Naomi says, just a thought, listening to the, quote, defense of Shelley Silver, everybody does it, so it's okay. Think about how we view transgressions by kids. That very same defense is dismissed universally. And in fact, we adults spend lots of energy trying to extinguish the way of thinking and eradicating the resulting behaviors. Do as I say, not as I do, is alive and well among adults. Makes me nuts. Well, not on this panel, I would say. Okay. So Jim says, who will wind up paying his legal fees? He still keeps his pension. Besides prison, those convicted of these crimes should be pauperized. And Robert says, it's all about greed. All the power and status for all those years wasn't enough. There's just no such thing as enough to satisfy those who suffer from the sickness of greed. Bob from Albany. Shan says, poor Sheldon, if only like Joe Bruno he could rewrite the law so that what he did was not illegal anymore, then he could be exonerated and his good name cleared after he did criminal acts and rewrote the laws so that those criminal acts were criminal no more. We all need to have such grandiose lives. Now, wouldn't that be lovely?
It was the Supreme Court that reinterpreted the law after
and
Joe
Bruno's by the way,
conviction.
We don't know whether this is going to pass muster.
Right. This
so in
is
other
going
words,
to be
they
appealed.
Said,
you
the
can
court
be sure
said
of that.
That the theft of honest services law was too broad and that you really had to show a quid pro quo specifically. Now, you had the doctor, who was the one example that they had, the mesothelioma doctor, standing up and saying it wasn't specific. It was just a request that he send it to me and we send it back. He was convicted on that. But maybe the court's going to say that wasn't specific enough. We don't know.
Yep. He's got a right to appeal, and you can bet
and
that
he will.
Appeal. Yep.
Yeah. Don says, I always love when Don writes, like Robin Hood, Sheldon Silver robbed from the rich and the poor and kept it all himself. that's from the 2,000-year-old man, as we all know. And George said, if the legislature wants to regain the trust of the public, they should adopt initiative and referendum. Yeah, that'll be the day. That's mine. We the people can do the work the politicians refuse to do. That's right. And let me tell you something. The last thing that these clowns are ever going to do is adopt initiative and referendum in this state because it's a great idea. And let me tell you, a lot of the nonsense we're seeing would not be there if people could put ballot propositions, as they do in other states, online. And then people could say, you know, we approve of this. You wouldn't have a lot of things. I'll tell you one thing that would pass in a minute. Term limits.
How do you feel, though, about how referendums have been used against social justice?
That is always, Barbara, that's always the argument. It's always a legitimate argument that you can't do it. To me, if you believe in democracy, then you got to believe in it. And then if the slings and arrows come and you pass something that's ridiculous, then you turn around and you make sure it's not going to happen.
They spend a lot of time in California dealing with
Well, that's happened in California.
Yeah.
They pass something
and
they
have referendums, and being a part of communities that are attacked by those referendums, I just feel like, I mean, I believe in democracy too. So I think term limits and, you know, leaving it to the voters, I can see both sides of it. But the thing is that so often they're used with very, very draconian agendas.
Well, when you say so often, I'm not so sure you're right about that. You're absolutely right in one way. That has been done. You go to a state which has a history of civil rights denial, and it's more likely to happen than it is in a New York state.
I see what you're
saying. If it happens in New York State, I have a feeling a lot of people would be out there saying, no, we don't think these people should be elected for life.
But those aren't even on the table. What are on the table are real reforms that would close loopholes that let let billionaires give as much money as they want to politicians, and the rules about how you can contribute to a campaign and various conflicts that currently are allowed would be prohibited. You know, there's a lot of things on the table, and including the one of your referenced readers or listeners called in the emails. I'm sorry, said denying a pension to someone who's convicted of a crime. That's on the table. It hasn't been acted on. Shelley Silver will not lose his pension, but there's a lot of reforms that could be acted on. They've been brought up, and they don't go anywhere.
Yeah. Well, you're right. But there are in my bathroom, we have a box of Band-Aids. And some of them are really little Band-Aids, and some of them are bigger Band-Aids, and then there's huge Band-Aids. So it's not either or, Mike. I think that George says they should adopt initiative and referendum, something I've been preaching to my students and others for years and years. Yeah, they're not going to do that, nor are they going to take their own pensions away, because they're just not about to do that.
Term limits may get some momentum.
That's a big Band-Aid.
But that would take a constitutional amendment, I believe, and wouldn't it?
Yeah, so?
That's a heavy lift. You got to get it through two legislatures. Well, it takes around 5 years.
You got to strike while the iron is hot.
Well,
the iron
it seems is hot like right it'll now. Cool off in
well,
5 years.
Well, that's right. And that's why Preet Bharara deserves a medal, because he has really done this gigantic job here.
Let's move on to some other topics and get to other things this morning. A lot of other stuff to talk about. First of all, there was an interesting meeting. We were talking about this in the break for a moment. There was an interesting meeting between Donald Trump and black pastors. Donald Trump met privately on Monday with black pastors and religious figures at Trump Tower in Manhattan, trying to confront skepticism about his candidacy and project sensitivity about minority concerns. In an interview after the meeting, Mr. Trump declared that there was great love in the room. He said that the ministers discuss a range of issues with him, like the high unemployment rate among black youth and a spate of police shootings of African Americans, especially the death of a Chicago teenager who was shot 16 times by an officer, an incident caught on tape. The meeting came after a days-long dust-up over the purpose of the meeting that illuminated widespread skepticism among black leaders about Mr. Trump's candidacy and his motivations in getting together with him. On Wednesday, Mr. Trump's campaign announced that he would receive the endorsement of 100 black pastors at a news conference after the meeting. The announcement followed a torrent of criticism of Mr. Trump for suggesting that a Black Lives Matter protester who had been kicked and punched several days before by attendees at a Trump rally in Alabama, quote, deserved it. By Friday, some of those who were listed as scheduled to attend the endorsement news conference said that they had not made up their minds about whether to support Mr. Trump. And on the Ebony Magazine website, some pastors who were not part of the meeting wrote an open letter criticizing Mr. Trump's language on the campaign trail. The meeting at Trump Tower still took place, but the campaign decided that there would no longer be an official endorsement news conference, according to his campaign.
What can you say?
You kind of summed it all up. I mean, the interesting thing to me is that the person who took the blame was a minister from Ohio.
Cleveland, specifically.
And my hometown. Your
hometown.
And he took the blame for a misunderstanding. Why can't Trump's campaign take a little blame for something? They messed up here, don't you think?
Well, I think the whole Trump approach is never to admit you've done anything wrong, ever. And people love it. They just love it. How come Trump is still leading in so many of these polls? Because people say, well, you know, I don't want to be held responsible either. I want to say whatever I want to say, whenever I want to say it. It's refreshing. That's the one you always hear. It's refreshing that the man says whatever he wants, as if the vomit that is coming out of his voice is not wrong. It's just that it's good because he's saying whatever he thinks.
Well, I think that this meetings and then very flubbed press conference, I think, is really cynical. It's cynical manipulation. He doesn't really have a huge amount of support in the black community. There's no way he could. He refers to us as the blacks. You can find that easily. That when he talks about his relationships with people in the African-American community,
sure.
He says, I have really good relationships with the blacks. Really? Okay.
Oh, they love me. They love me.
but that term, the blacks,
how about the Jews?
Black people.
It's just wrong.
Yeah. You know, he's
sure.
Wrong on so many levels. And also his all-purpose racism and Islamophobia and xenophobia, et cetera, there's a consciousness now, I think, among progressive and alert people of color. You don't even have to be progressive, but there's a consciousness that if he's talking about Mexican rapists, that's just like an inch step away from how he perceives, you know, other people who have been demonized and marginalized. So I don't think he has a lot of support, and I really didn't, I didn't appreciate having to watch that.
But how, and then Barbara, why did, you can't speak for everybody in that room, but how come they showed up?
Well, the thing is, there's a strong conservative strain and component in our black community. That's not hard to find or to document, and that's particularly true of those who are religious figures. Not necessarily most, I think, black theology, when you look at it in general, tends to be progressive because of who the parishioners are and what the actual life conditions are of those who practice the faith. Do you see what I'm saying? So in general, if you look at black theology, you see liberation theology, you see justice, you see Martin Luther King and all who follow and are part of that tradition. But there's also a very strong conservative strain, not necessarily as large as far as the percentages, but very, very real.
So let me ask you this. You're a tremendous leader in our community, and we honor you, and you're here.
Thank you so much, Alan.
No, I mean it. But what would happen if you got a telephone call from a Trump person saying Trump would love to have you join this group?
That wouldn't happen. So
let's assume we
don't have to do speculation.
You're not on that mailing list.
No, not at all. No.
Let's assume he had the chutzpah to do it. Would you say okay? Let's hear what the man has to say.
No,
or would you? Not?
I would not, because the thing is, like, I would not. I would see that even my physical presence at such an event would telegraph to people, like, she must be all right with that bigger picture, the Muslims.
So could we construe this to be Barbara's admonition to those people who did show up that maybe they should have followed the same reasoning you were following?
No, because we don't share political perspectives. I mean, I can't tell people who...
Well, I guarantee you there were Democrats in that room.
Okay.
So, therefore, the Judge, did you want to...
Well, no, you were saying this before as far as the political... That there is a strong conservative movement
segment
within the African American community.
Been. Yeah, Booker T. Washington versus W.
And there
Du Bois.
And there is
archetypal.
A voting block there, and he is going for that voting block.
And do you think that everybody in that room was in that voting block? Because I don't. I think there are people who are opportunists, and they see possibilities. I can't describe motives to them because I don't know them.
The thing is, when I talk about the conservatism, one of the things that I should really clarify is that the conservatism that I'm speaking of generally isn't conservatism around understandings of racial oppression.
Right.
So even right. people who are conservative and who believe in up, you know, like up from slavery, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, a lot of the conservatism has to do with gender and sexuality issues, frankly, and not that as much around race. There's probably more agreement around racial understandings between Black conservatives and
And by the nature of pastors, a strong religious component.
Yes, yeah. So the thing is, the conservatism isn't necessarily around racial politics, but it's, you know, it's very complicated, and I'm really glad I'll not get that phone call.
Mike, you might. You might. Michael wrote, if you're Black and you endorse Trump, you need to have your head examined. That's what Michael wrote.
I don't have to say anything about that.
And you know, that's just the way.
But if you're white, it's okay. I know.
Well, you know, there are a lot of motives for why people do things.
Yes,
one of them is strict adherence to their own particular philosophy. Another is, hey, there may be some money around here. Who knows?
Right. And looking forward, like, what if this individual does become president or a power broker in the party in a way, such a way around the 2016 convention, et cetera, et cetera? Do we not want to have any access at all?
That's
how they might be thinking. But you were going to say something, Mike.
I was actually going to echo that. I mean, it does. If someone, the leading candidate for the Republican Party, invites your constituency to come in and talk and have a dialogue, that's exactly right. If the guy does win, at least you might have some access and some. You might have had some influence on some of his positions. And why would you turn that down if you were a leader in your community?
He is so fact-free in how he understands.
Well, that's right.
Anything.
And Cody wrote, good morning, panel. Trump has reached the point where he can say absolutely anything with impunity. For example, one plus one equals giraffe. And his Philistine supporters would stand by him and proudly proclaim, I like how he speaks his mind and takes a firm stand regarding math and long-necked animals.
That's right, indeed. And let's not forget, too, how he made fun of a reporter living with a disability.
Yes.
Right. He denies that. There's a lot of back and forth.
Well, he denies everything.
He made it. Right. Well, that's exactly right. He can
He denied the comments that he made about Carly Fiorina and women. He denied the comments that he made regarding the reporter.
You know
from
who
the
does
Times.
That? Vladimir Putin.
Yes.
You know, he denies that they shot down that the Russians shot down the plane over Ukraine. He denies when the airliner went down a few weeks ago, for the longest time he denied that that was a terrorist act, and he denies that he's going in there to help bolster Assad in Syria, that he's actually going after ISIS when he's really it's been shown that he's been attacking the rebels that are opposed to Assad and not ISIS. I mean, people in power have the audacity to just look at reality in the face and turn the other way.
I need just a moment to look Rob Chacona in the eye because I missed the break, didn't I? Okay. So let's do that. And then if we make up the break, you won't be mad at me, right? Okay, good. Thank you. I appreciate that. So we'll take our break. We'll be back. We'll make up for all the people that we ticked off, and we'll be back right after that.
Support comes from the Stafford Owens Law Firm, advising North Country and Canadian clients in matters of cross-border trade and business law, PlattsburghLawyers.net. Capital Roots, providing fresh food for the Capital Region for 40 years. Grow, educate, provide. CapitalRoots.org. The ADK Cafe, a delicious kitchen in Keene, New York, serving home-cooked breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. TheADKCafe.com. And Simmons Recovery Consulting, advocating for public entities that are recipients of a FEMA disaster, specializing in financial strategy development and grants management. SimmonsRecoveryConsulting.com.
Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. I just want to get to two other issues and touch on them briefly, and then we'll end with several letters that we've gotten over the discussions on state government, but mostly about Donald Trump, not surprisingly. You mentioned, Barbara, that you are that you're from Cleveland.
That's
Ohio.
Correct.
So we go to Cleveland now with the report regarding Tamir Rice, and I just realized that there we go. Lawyers for the family of Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old boy fatally shot last year by the Cleveland police, have presented Ohio prosecutors with two outside reports that call an officer's decision to shoot the boy, quote, unreasonable. The reports made public over the weekend are at odds with three previous investigations commissioned by the prosecutor's office that labeled the shooting as tragic but reasonable. Grand jurors are expected to consider all those reports in deciding whether police officers should face criminal charges. Meanwhile, in Chicago, we have the other story making news in Chicago when the tape was released of a Chicago police officer fatally shooting Laquan McDonald. That officer posted bond yesterday, $150,000 bond, needed to be released shortly after 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon, according to the Cook County Sheriff's Department. Part of the money was raised by the Fraternal Order of Police's Chicago chapter. He has been held without bail since he was charged last week with first-degree murder for fatally shooting Laquan McDonald, a Chicago teenager, in October of 2014. How do we look at the relation of these two stories?
What I was just going to say, that's why the movement is called Black Lives Matter, because when you have a minor children, if you're 17, I guess you're not officially a minor, but when you have...
Under 18, right, in New York, are you a minor? Right?
Or 16?
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple
different things.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, but the thing is, these are kids, and when you have that happening with impunity, different times, different places, different circumstances, foot-dragging around the adjudication of these cases. Why was that the tape in Chicago not released until following the general election in November? I mean, just all these things that are just really, really wrong. Now, we were talking about Mr. Trump, and one of the things that he asserts, and he was saying this, I don't know who he was saying in response to, but he was saying, all lives matter. That's not the point. The point is that when you have a more than a tragic growth in industry of these continued murders, there's that Washington Post article, I believe, that you sent to us about the 24 black men who've been killed since.
Yes.
Since the beginning of this year. And then there was another article.
Calendar year 2015.
Yeah, there was another article about how black men are seven times more likely to be killed, I guess, in police encounters than white males. So it's just, it's pandemic, and there's not enough time, really, even if we had another hour, to really dig deep and try to get into it. But one of the things that I think is really important is that we begin to look at criminal justice reform, which I see as perhaps eventually going up to the Supreme Court about trying to address some of these issues. I think that our Attorney General is on this. I think, you know, we just really need to look like what's so broken that we can't get this to alter and change.
Well, one common factor in many of these cases, and that's been crucial, is video.
Yeah,
right.
It seems like since everybody carries around a high-resolution video camera in their pocket now, we're now, you know, now seeing things that we only heard about and perhaps disbelieved.
Well, this made me think about the whole issue of body cameras, which has come up as something that is quite useful in this movement. But if you're going to have the body camera on the police officer and you're not going to release it till a year later,
or if the officers are going to go over to the Burger King and intimidate them around what's on their camera. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, I switched topics on you.
No,
but
I understand.
Is,
I understand.
Yeah,
I didn't. I'm sorry. Could I have a little bit of explanation?
Yes.
And then,
Well, meaning that if you have the in the case in Chicago,
yeah,
So in the case in Chicago, you have – it's a dashboard cam, right? It was a dashboard cam, and then they held the video for a year.
Right.
So on these body cams with the officers, they have the right – the video that Mike was talking about before has usually been amateur video from people outside who are at the scene.
Like in South Carolina.
And that's released immediately. So if this is going to be held, how much – good is it going to do, I guess, is my
question. Right. Is it better than nothing, number one? Number two, can't you make rules, as Barbara just said, that demand that stuff become accessible?
It is better than nothing. And see, that's where the reform efforts come in, too. I mean, there are protocols and regulations that officers have to follow, but they are often determined by the individual municipalities leadership. The thing is, the more, as I said, the more we can get to that level, the better off we'll be. And then we also have to get to, like, why are black bodies, black and brown bodies, so vilified and so absolutely debased in the United States 400 plus years after chattel slavery began.
We're going to end it there, but a lot to think about. We're out of time. Alan, Mike, Barbara, thank you very much.
Giving Tuesday, we need it.
WAMC.org, WAMC.org. We'll be back after this.